Okay, we'll get started again. So, we have this situation where we've got a whole bunch of things in our environment causing the signal to reflect, refract, scatter, etc. And we've looked at sort of large-scale effects that this causes, and again, boiled down to characterizing it primarily in terms of the power loss, and saw what we could say about that. The problem we have now is that mobility causes a whole another set of effects. Okay, and some of these are due to the interaction of the multipath problem with mobility and how the paths change, and some of them are literally have to do with just the motion of the objects, so either the mobile station or the obstacles in the environment. Okay, come on. There we go. So, small scale fading refers to the rapid fluctuation of signal characteristics, amplitudes, phases, or delays of a radio signal over a short period of time or distance traveled. And again, it's caused by the same things that the different versions of the signal are received at different, slightly different times. Although there's also a potential factor where just the mobility itself causes issues. Okay. So, what are the main factors that influence small-scale fading? Again, multipath propagation, and so the phase change again is going to be affected, or the phase change itself will change with mobility. The speed of either the mobile or the surrounding objects, and this is sort of relative motion, so the relative motion between a base station and a mobile unit. And this is referred to as a Doppler shift, and it manifests itself as a perception and a change of the frequency of the signal. And this can be caused, again, either by the motion of the mobile unit or even the motion of objects on which there's reflection, etc. Okay, and finally, the transmission bandwidth of the signal. Okay. Can be an issue. And again, the idea here is that it's more related to the channel. There's a certain bandwidth for the channel over which the fading will be proportional, sort of the same over this whole bandwidth. And then there are portions of the channel for which will experience sort of disproportionate fading, and so if your bandwidth is spanning all of this, certain components of the signal will experience more attenuation or fading than others, and that will cause distortion in your signal. Okay, so what we'll do is we won't say too much about we won't say anything more about multipath. Again, we've seen what issues arise from multipath. We will have a look at these sort of two additional components, how motion induces a Doppler effect, and then again how the bandwidth of a channel relative to the bandwidth of a signal causes distortions, or potentially can cause distortions. Okay. So a Doppler shift refers to the change in observed frequency of a signal due to the motion either of the mobile station or interfering objects. Okay. And so we'll look at sort of a fairly simple example of this. So we have a mobile station which is moving at a constant rate along some path while receiving a signal. Okay, so our signal is coming from S, which is assumed to be a distance away, and we're moving in some trajectory relative to S, and we have an angle theta between our direction of motion and our path to the transmitter. Okay. And we're going to assume that this, over the distance we move, we're going to assume that our angle isn't changing a lot. So essentially that that we're very far away from the transmitter relative to the distance moved. Okay. And so the distortion we experience is going to be caused by the difference in the change in the length of the path that the signal takes. Okay. So the change in the length of the path is just given by whatever distance we traveled times the cosine theta, so the angle of the path of our direction of motion relative to the transmitter. Okay. And d, of course, is a function of velocity times time. You go a certain distance in a certain amount of time, given you're traveling at a fixed velocity. So this leads to a time-dependent phase change. So the change in phase is dependent on the change in the length of the path, which in turn is dependent on time. Okay. But if your phase change is dependent on time, this appears as actually a change in the frequency. Frequency is essentially the change of the angle with time. Okay. So we end up with a change in our observed frequency, which is again dependent on our change in phase over time, so delta V over delta T, and that is V over lambda, or V over 2 pi lambda. Okay. So that change in frequency can is dependent on the direction in which your which you're traveling relative to your station. Are you getting closer to it or farther away?
So when the object is moving, there's always a change of the trigger.
Sorry?
There's always a change of the angle between the source, the transmission, and
yes.
The...
Yeah, but we're assuming that, that change of the angle is small because the transmitter is far away from the receiver. Okay, so it's over the we're looking at this over sort of very short. What happens over a very short distance, and that angle isn't going to change a lot over a very short distance. Okay. So we're going to assume that it's actually not changing at all. Okay. So, again, that's sort of an interesting effect in the sense that it's impacting on the perceived frequency of the signal and leading to, again, issues regarding the frequency of the signal. The final problem that you can encounter is, again, the characteristics of the channel itself. And so we talk about a coherence bandwidth, which is a measure of the range of frequencies over which all of the components, spectral components, will sort of experience the same change in gain and phase. Okay, so they're all impacted in exactly the same way. Okay, and so if the bandwidth of your signal is within this coherence bandwidth, then it will be the way in which it's impacted is predictable to some extent. Okay. Now the problem with this is that the coherence bandwidth is dependent on the multipath characteristics of the channel. So again, it's not necessarily trivial to determine. Okay. A somewhat related time domain concept is what's called a coherence time. And this is the amount of time over which a channel response is invariant. And so, again, you can think of this relative to the bit transmission time. So over a bit transmission time is everything about the channel staying stable, or are portions of the channel or are characteristics of the channel changing over the bit transmission time. Okay, and so again, it's a sort of interplay between frequency domain and time domain. Okay. So we have all these effects, and the main thing we're going to do here is just sort of try and categorize the effects. And so the small scale fading depends on the nature of the signal and on the channel characteristics. And so signal parameters are bandwidth and symbol period, or the time it takes to transmit a bit or multiple bits, and the channel characteristics are the delay spread, so how much delay can you expect to see within signals, and Doppler spread, the amount of frequency change you might potentially experience, the phase and frequency change. Okay. So, depending on which of the, on all of the above, you can get four distinct effects. Flat fading versus frequency, selective fading. So again, do all of the, does everything in the signal experience, do all components, spectral components experience the same fading or not? And then fast or slow fading, and that's pretty much relative to bit times. So it will, if you're transmitting a bit, will it experience changes within the transmission or not? Okay, so here we see that characterization. And so flat fading versus frequency fading, again, is dependent on the multipath characteristics of the channel. And then fast versus slow fading is dependent on Doppler effects. And so these sort of are relative to coherence time. These are relative to coherence. That's not true. So let me take that back. Got that wrong. Yeah, these are related to coherence bandwidth and time. Okay, so just to say a few more words about each of these: flat fading, selective fading, fast fading, slow fading, and then we'll look at a relatively simple example to show sort of again where these effects enter in. So with flat fading, the channel has a constant gain and phase response over a bandwidth that is greater than that of the transmitted signal. Then, again, everything changes uniformly. The changes are based then on the multipath effects, and two cases are typically considered. Rayleigh fading is in the case where there's no line of sight, so therefore your signal's bouncing off sort of various objects and there's no dominant path. Ricean fading refers to cases where you have a line of sight and then other interfering signals. Okay. And the effect of flat fading typically is that you can have quite deep fades, which can require sort of a fair boost in power to overcome. Again, we'll see this in an example in a minute. Okay. So with frequency selective fading, the bandwidth, the coherence bandwidth of the channel is smaller in that of the, than the bandwidth of the signal. So you get distortion then in the signal because various components of the signal are attenuating at different rates. Okay. So this is difficult to deal with because you have to sort of analyze again the exact cause of the sort of fade within the signal. Okay. And so it creates distortion, and it's more difficult to deal with. So from that point of view, you might want to actually keep your signal within a fixed bandwidth. Okay, again, fast fading. Impulse response changes rapidly relative to the duration of the symbol. And so the coherence time of the channel is smaller than the symbol period of the transmitted signal. So again, with fast fading, the characteristics of the signal transmission are changing during the period of a bit transmission. Okay, and that happens typically only if you have quite low data rates. And so with slow fading, the response changes at a slower rate than the transmitted signal, and here the Doppler effect comes into play. Okay. Now, in practice, what you're going to have is a combination of a number of these problems coming to pass, and so you'll have to sort of account for a number of distortions within your algorithm. Okay, and so we have our, what would be a typical free space loss, and then you have changes which are over sort of a relatively long duration, and then these fast changes over short periods of time. Okay, and what you have to do again is try to compensate for the deepest fade that you're going to experience. Okay, so, and again, just this example primarily shows how the signal bandwidth versus channel bandwidth interplays. We have a situation where we have a two-path problem with a fixed delay between the two paths. And so, again, because of the phase rate, the phase change, the maximum attenuation is going to occur every 1 over tau. Okay. And so what we're going to do in the example is just look at how that impacts on narrow band, sort of medium band, and wide band signals. Okay. Okay. So in our first system, this is a narrow band signal, and we're sending at an incredibly slow data rate. And so the channel characteristics are constant over our whole bandwidth. Okay, because we have a very narrow, it's very narrow bandwidth then. Okay. Now, because of the narrow bandwidth, the signal gets attenuated, but not distorted. So we say that it's experiencing flat fading, and the delay that it's experiencing is significantly, so the delay between the two signals is significantly less than the bit period. Okay. So, if we move on to a wider bandwidth, a medium band signal, then what we see is that, again, we're going to experience our maximum fading at frequencies within our signal bandwidth. And so our signal is experiencing our selective fading. The delay between the signals now is longer than a bit period, and so that's going to cause inter-symbol interference, and so we're getting distortion that's going to be more difficult to compensate for. Okay. And so finally, we have a wideband signal, and it's going to experience selective fading and a specific delay period, and typically to deal with this scenario, we use sort of clever encoding methods. Okay. So, again, the issue of exactly how your signal is encoded is now, we see, is having an impact on the quality, modulated, is having an impact on the quality of the received signal. And we've said that that's dependent, again, on your channel characteristics and the specific multipath properties within your channel. Okay. So this is problematic, and it can be combated in a number of ways in terms of how you modulate your signals potentially. Etc. The other option is to use diversity to attempt to address the problem. And so we can think of either having multiple receivers or potentially also multiple transmitters. And again, we'll see this coming back later in term when we talk about LTE and some of the more modern propositions for how to transmit signals. Okay. But the idea behind diversity reception specifically is that you'll have more than one receiver, and they're going to be getting slightly different versions of your signals, just again, because they're positioned slightly differently. So if you can be clever about how you compare those signals, potentially you can have better chances of recovering your initial signal. Okay. So there's a number of different types of diversity. So space diversity relies on the two antennas being separated by a distance, the distance should be enough that the fading that they experience is uncorrelated. Okay. So the main problem with that sort of an approach is the additional cost of the hardware. Again, we'll see that these days that's maybe not such a big thing. Okay. So within space diversity, we have to sort of have some algorithm for combining our signals. And so there are a number of possibilities. You can choose the one with the highest signal-to-noise ratio, so the one with the most power. Okay. You can sort of take a combination of the two signals, and then within that you can have different weightings. Okay, so in this example, we see that if we have a specific receiver sensitivity, we're experiencing these deep fades, so we're going to lose the signal at certain points. And so what we hope is, again, if we receive two slightly different signals, that the fades are slightly offset and that we can compensate for one fade within the signal of, if one signal's faded, then we can compensate for the signal, the second signal. Okay. And we see that that works reasonably well in this case, though we still do lose signal at one point. But we've sort of minimized the distortion to the signal. Okay, other possibilities are that at the transmitter, we transmit two different copies of the signal at different frequencies, but again, that's going to require additional hardware resources to demodulate the multiple signals now. Time diversity says send the signal with a sufficient interval. And the easiest form of this would be just a simple repetition code, so send things multiple times and hope that they get there all right. Or, again, add some sort of error correcting code. Okay. And what you want is that the interleaving times are greater than the fade direction, fade duration. So if you lose a portion, then that's replicated at a later time when you aren't losing it. Okay. So just as a note, ARQ, so requesting the signal again, could be interpreted as a form of time diversity. Again, you're sending duplicate copies of the signal, but it's stretching it a bit. Okay, so another possibility is path diversity, and it's the goal is to allow the receiver to resolve signal components arriving from different paths. And this is possible, and this is used within spread spectrum, which we haven't talked about. The idea behind spread spectrum is that you code a bit as a sequence of higher bit rate symbols, so you, as a number of bits, and then if you make if the delay is longer than a single bit transmission, so within this sort of mini transmission round, then you can distinguish between the sort of main signal and the delayed signal. Again, we'll talk about spread spectrum a bit later, and you'll see again how that works and how it has to do with the codes and having to choose the codes properly. Okay, and similarly, you can use multiple different polarizations to transmit multiple signals, and hopefully, again, one of them is okay. Additional to a receiver diversity, you can have transmitter diversity. And again, the idea is that if you have multiple transmitters, then the paths to the receiver are going to be slightly different, and hopefully in a way that sort of enhances your signal. Okay, so again, we'll come back to this sort of an idea a bit when we mention, for instance, MIMO technology and how that works. We won't really touch on it when we're discussing spread spectrum, although again, if you think back, you should be able to work out essentially how it would work for spread spectrum. So that's all we're going to say about the characteristics of a channel. And moving on from here, for the next little while, we're going to be sort of assuming large scale effects. And so basically what we're going to do is assume that, again, our power, our received power is dropping fairly predictably, in the sense of we're not going to worry about sort of motion and sort of local effects, but just say it's dropping as some factor of D, and then see again how we can, how basic cellular design comes from that assumption. We'll then return to notions of spread spectrum, and we'll be getting back more into these sort of small scale effects and how do you combat the small scale effects. So that's it for today. Next week, again, will be the sort of basic layouts of cellular systems and how they arise from this idea that our power is dropping by a certain amount. So I'll see you next week.